Most countries have son preference. And the way that you can tell what kind of sex selective abortion is happening in those countries is by looking at the differences in the numbers of boys and girls born. So it's called SRB, sex ratio at birth.
I'm Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute. We're glad you're able to join us for another episode of Straight Talk on Life Issues.
And I'm your co-host, Victor Nieves. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
Yeah, Victor, all abortion is wrong, but sex-selective abortion is especially grievous. It's a discriminatory practice of aborting a baby solely because he or she is not the desired sex wanted by the parents.
And sex-selective abortion has become a global problem, including right here in the United States, where only 7 states actually ban sex-selective abortions.
And it's been found that Planned Parenthood has willingly given women abortions when their explicit reason was because they didn't want the sex of the baby.
And today we're going to be talking about sex-selective abortion with 2 very important guests. First joining us is Stephen Mosher. He's the president of the Population Research Institute and an internationally recognized authority on China and population issues, as well as an acclaimed author and speaker. We're also joined by Reggie Littlejohn. She's the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, an international coalition that opposes forced abortion and sexual slavery in China. She's an acclaimed international expert on China's one-child policy, and she's testified 8 times at the United States Congress, multiple times in European parliaments and governments around the world.
Well, Steve and Reggie, thank you for joining us for this very important program.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for taking up this issue and thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we're so happy to have you with us today. Briefly tell us what you do, Reggie.
So I'm an attorney. In the mid-90s, I represented Chinese refugees in their cases for political asylum in the United States, which these 2 refugees were both victims of the one-child policy. And that was how I came to understand that the one-child policy was enforced through forced abortion, forced sterilization, and even infanticide. I left the practice of law and established the Women's Rights Without Frontiers. Our focus has been stopping forced abortion in China, but then we expanded that focus to stopping sex-selective abortion of baby girls in China, which is related to the forced abortion policy. And we're the only organization in the world that has boots on the ground inside of China, actually saving baby girls, most likely now from neglect, abandonment, and grinding poverty. But there still is a gendercide problem inside of China. And then from there, I have also established Anti-Globus International to stop Chinese-style totalitarianism from being pushed out into the world through globalist organizations like the World Health Organization and the United Nations. So that's what I do.
Steve, could you briefly tell us what you do?
Well, because I was in China during the beginning of the one-child policy, I converted to Catholicism, had 9 children, and with Father Paul Mark set up an organization called the Population Research Institute, where we make the case that babies are not burdens, but blessings, that people are the ultimate resource, the one resource that you cannot do without, and that countries everywhere ought to stop abortion and enact pronatal policies to increase the birth rate, because our long-term problem globally is not too many children, it's too few children.
Well, Reggie, what is the state of sex-selective abortion in the United States?
Well, this is a very interesting thing. Most countries have son preference. And the way that you can tell what kind of sex-selective abortion is happening in those countries is by looking at the differences in the numbers of boys and girls born. So it's called SRB, sex ratio at birth. And so since the United States does not have a skewed sex ratio at birth, people have been assuming that we don't have sex-selective abortion, but that is not the case. I'm holding in my hands a November 2024 article in Science Direct called Roe v. Wade and Sex Balancing by somebody called Yichu Li. And the upshot of this is that after abortion was legalized in the United States, families became more likely to achieve gender diversity among children. Article goes on to explain that after Roe v. Wade, if the first child was, let's say, a boy, then it was much less likely that the second child would be a boy after Roe v. Wade. Or if the first child was a girl, then it was much less likely that the second child would be a girl after Roe v. Wade. So people used the legalization of abortion to achieve gender diversity in their families. And this is something that is harder to detect than straight up son preference, which is what happens in most countries. But what it indicates is that in the United States, sex selective abortion is happening as well.
Steve?
Well, I testified before the U.S. Congress several years ago on sex selection abortion in the United States. And I pointed out that, of course, with the advent of modern ultrasound technology, you can detect the sex of the unborn child at 16, 17 weeks or even earlier, and that certain minority populations were taking advantage of that to selectively eliminate baby girls. We looked at the time at the U.S. Census data for Koreans, for Vietnamese, for Chinese, and for Indians, and there were definite disparities in the sex ratio. Sex ratio at birth, boys and little girls, ought to be 106 little boys for 100 little girls, because little girls are naturally more robust and survive at higher rates than little boys. And so we always have a few more little boys in the birth cohort normally. But in those populations, there were 100, not 106 little boys for 100 baby girls. There were 110, 115, 120. Obviously, a result of the continuation of sex selection abortion in the United States among these immigrant populations. Now, we know there's sex selection abortion in the general population. And sometimes couples, American couples, will want a boy or want a girl, but there's no strong preference for sex. But in these immigrant populations, there is, and it seems to survive for at least two generations.
Mm. Are you aware of any geographic location where it seems to be a little more dense?
California, because of its larger minority population, with more than 10% of the population coming from different Asian countries. And you can see this, I mean, anecdotally, if you've been in Silicon Valley, for example, where there are a lot of Indian software engineers, you will see women walking around in saris with two little boys and no little girls. If you go to the Chinatowns in San Francisco or Los Angeles, you will see a preponderance of little boys. So I think it's obvious in just looking that the preference for sons has been carried over here by immigrants. And that's why when I testified before Congress, before the House, I said that we need a law banning sex selection abortion in the United States, because this is not just discrimination. This is discrimination that kills. And it's the worst form of sex discrimination imaginable. So it needs to be eliminated, of course, along with all abortions over time.
Well, Reggie, expanding a little bit beyond the United States, what is the state of sex selective abortion globally?
Well, there are certain hotspots. So China actually remains a hotspot. And then there's India. And then there's also, like in the Balkans, former Soviet countries. So Albania, Montenegro, North Macedonia, and Kosovo all have skewed gender ratios. So those, I think, are the main hotspots internationally of this.
Do you attribute, Reggie, that to cultural preferences for male children?
Well, yes, the articles that I'm looking at right now, they all attribute it to cultural. And it's similar in the Balkans, China, and India. They all have a culture where the boy is required to carry on the family name and to sort of continue the family. And so that's where you get this son preference. And then I think also in those cultures, the boy is the one who's expected to take care of the parents when they get old. I know that, for example, in China and India, they have a saying that raising a daughter is like watering somebody else's garden, because when the girl grows up, all the love, all the education, all the expense, all the everything you've put into her is going to go to somebody else, because she's going to marry somebody. She's going to become a part of that person's family. She's going to help hit that her husband's parents in their old age. So it's perceived to be in traditional culture, it's perceived to be pretty much a total loss.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you see that improving at all over time, as far as that bias against the family of the wife?
I think that in the cities and other places it can improve, but I'll tell you that in the Chinese countryside, it has not improved. So I just want to tell you kind of an alarming statistic that I just read from China, which is that, as you may know, China has instituted a three-child policy, right? And I have said all along, when they went from a one-child policy to a two-child policy to a three-child policy, that I did not believe that this was going to get rid of gendercide at all. So right now, the Chinese Communist Party in China What they want to do, they're trying to really encourage people to have three children, but no more than three children. So forced abortion in China is still something to be contended with. Either if you're unmarried, the rule is married women are allowed to have three children. So if you're unmarried or if it's a fourth child, it's still the Chinese Communist Party reserves the right to forcibly abort you. And I had said, and this has been proven true, I'm looking at the Congressional Executive Commission on China report from 2024, which came out recently, that even under the two-child policy, or certainly the three-child policy, if the first baby is a girl and they only have one space left, you know, they're not going to allow that second one to be a girl. There's going to be selective abortion. And early on in the two-child policy, I became aware of an account of a woman. She and her husband had a daughter, and they thought they were sort of one and done because it was the one child policy they couldn't have anymore. So when then they opened it up to a two child policy, he said, oh, great, now let's have a son. And he forced his wife to have four sex selective abortions in 1 year of four baby girls.
Oh, my.
And she died. She died. Okay. So now under the three child policy, if the first two children are girls, boy, watch out for the third one. And the thing is, it's really hard these days to get an abortion in China because the government is really trying to encourage and almost pressure people to have more kids. Nevertheless, even though it's hard to get an abortion, I'm just going to read this to you, okay? The legacy of the one-child policy, 1980 to 2015, continues to have an impact on Chinese society, including human trafficking for the purpose of marriage and commercial sex trade. Data published this past year shows that on average, boy preference for couples having a third child, with 133 boys born for every 100 girls born across China. 133 boys born for every 100 girls born. That's like almost a third of the girls who are third daughters being aborted. And I'm telling you that these couples have to sort of turn themselves inside out to obtain those abortions because it's not that easy. So they're really determined to abort that third girl.
Do you think that men and women are having more children, or has the one child been ingrained in them so strongly that they stop with one child?
Most couples are not having more children, okay? And there's a number of reasons for that. I think the first reason is the one that you stated. The Chinese Communist Party, over a period of decades, was able to beat into people's heads that one child is enough. I mean, they totally destroyed Chinese family culture, which used to just value both kids, and both of those are gone now because of the Chinese Communist Party. But then beyond that, people don't want to have kids because it's expensive. Also, there's a lingering effect of sort of the little emperor syndrome, where people, they consider themselves to be the only one that's important because they were raised as an only child and they got the attention of their parents and both sets of grandparents, but all on them. They don't even want necessarily to get married. There's a movement not to get married. And then raising kids is expensive. But then also, this is also a very important factor right now, which is that when COVID hit, the Chinese government locked down and came down so hard on Chinese society that the marriage age generation was just flattened. And they don't want to have kids. They don't want to bring children into a situation like the one that they're living in, which is everything that you worked hard for, everything you tried to do, all of your accomplishments, all of your efforts can just turn into nothing if the Chinese Communist Party decides to crack down because there's an epidemic. So there's two things. Like, there was one couple that COVID police were trying to force them into quarantine. They had been exposed to somebody who had COVID. They didn't necessarily have COVID. And they refused to go. And you have these, you know, ooh, Chinese police in these huge hazmat suits looking crazy, and this couple refusing to go. And the Chinese COVID police said to them, you are going to be punished, you and your children. And the man said, we are the last generation. And that went viral in China, because that is a feeling that they're going to be the last generation, that they're not going to produce children because they don't want to bring people into this kind of a situation. And there's also something in China called the lie down flat movement, which is that generation again. It's like, I'm not putting effort into the system. I'm just going to do the least thing that I possibly can to get by. And I'm not going to put anything into building this country or building my own career, because it could just all be taken away. So that's...
Wow. Yeah. You had told us about one story. Do you have any others that you might be able to share?
Well, what's happening right now? So as I mentioned, we have a network inside of China that is saving baby girls. Not as much from abortion these days, because in the area that we're in, it's almost impossible to get an abortion because they're trying to pressure people to have more kids. But what happens is, again, because of COVID, and by the way, COVID is still making the rounds in China. You know, we're pretty much done with it here, but it still can come back in areas of China. What happens is it shuts everything down so that we're in a farming community. People's vegetables are just rotting in the field. They have no ability to support themselves. And then all of a sudden they're pregnant or they give birth to their third daughter. So there's a couple things that happen. One is, you know, they just say, we can't afford this girl. Let's, you know, give her away. Like the father, it's usually the father and the mother-in-law. The wife, the mother does not want to give her away. But then sometimes she feels pressured to give her away because she's not even getting the calories to produce milk. So she can't even produce milk for her daughter. And she's like, what am I going to do? I can't produce milk. We can't afford to buy very expensive milk powder. And so she feels pressured to give her daughter away to a couple that wants a child. And so that's when Women's Rights Without Frontiers steps in and says, girls are as good as boys. Congratulations on your second daughter, your third daughter. And we will give you a monthly stipend for a year to empower you to keep your daughter so that she can take that monthly, it's $25 a month, which is a lot of money in the Chinese countryside, and go to her husband, go to her mother-in-law and say, hey, you know, I can't abandon this girl. Look, she's a lucky girl. She's already bringing money into the family. And we've saved hundreds of baby girls in the Chinese countryside this way.
That's pretty clever.
Steve, what are some of the long-term effects that we've seen as a result of sex-selective abortions?
Well, you have societies with a lot of excess testosterone running around. And that's not a happy thing, because men, as we men know, need the stabilizing influence of a woman and the responsibility of a family in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases to truly mature. And so you have a lot of men in places like India and especially in China who will never be able to find brides because the women they would have married were killed before a birth or immediately after birth by abandonment or by active female infanticide. So what that does is it creates a number of social pathologies. We have number one, we have the sex trafficking of women across borders from North Korea. Little girls from North Korea are sold into China. North Vietnam, Northern Burma are sold into China, sometimes as brides, sometimes into brothels for a life of sex slavery. We find rising rates of prostitution and homosexual activity in China itself, again, you know, attributable to the excess men. We also see a rising rate of violence in general in society as these unattached males become predators of one kind or another. Gang activity is on the rise. The gang is a kind of alternative family, you see. The gang leader is the father figure, and your brothers are the gang members. Another example is the ease with which China has been able to recruit soldiers for its military. Again, the military is another kind of alternative family. You have the brotherhood of the barracks. You have the commanding officer as a father figure. And I do think it adds to the overall aggressiveness of society, not just internally that we've talked about, but the possibility for external aggression also increased. How well would the People's Liberation Army fight, the bachelors in the People's Liberation fight to take Taiwan, for example, if they were promised brides, if they were successful? So I think across all fronts, internally and externally, having this excess population of males is very destabilizing, not just for Chinese society, but for society as a whole. And you can count that among the many, many failures of China's one-child policy, which over the last 40-some years has eliminated 400 million of the most productive, enterprising people from the face of the planet, and has actually doomed the China dream. China will never be the paramount power in the world because it eliminated half of the last two generations. Communist parties always kill. Sometimes they kill slowly, sometimes they kill quickly. The Chinese Communist Party has slowly killed off China's future. And we will see in a few decades that the population of the United States will actually exceed that of China because China's population is shrinking and dying and the U.S. population is still growing. Now, hopefully we can eliminate, you know, over a million abortions a year. Hopefully we can build strong families again and we can get the birth rate up even higher. That has lots of positive spinoff effects, like keeping Social Security solvent for another generation or two would be a good thing. It helps economic growth and so forth. All that is missing in China as the population goes into absolute demographic decline, as the population literally implodes.
Well, Steve, mentioning that, China's quite alarmed at their declining population. You can't take over the world with communism if you don't have the troops to do it. Do you think the people are responding to having more babies at the wishes of the government?
Well, the Chinese Communist Party would like to get the birth rate up. And when it ended the one-child policy in 2016, it said to the Chinese people, you're now free to have two children. And young people said, well, we're not interested in getting married, much less having children. You've told us for two generations that children's are burdens and not blessings. They went to three children in 2019. Now, in some provinces like Sichuan, which has 110 million people now, they've said, you can have as many children as you want. And young people who are finding it difficult to get jobs, the unemployment rate in China is probably around 40%. Government lies and says it's in the mid-single digits. They have no economic prospects. Businesses are closing. Restaurants are shutting down. Apartment buildings are standing empty. So the economic problems in the economic shrinkage in conjunction with the demographic collapse is really creating a perfect storm. And no one wants to bring children into that kind of world. Also because of the sheer tyranny of China's Communist Party. Jimmy Carter in 1979 lectured Americans about the malaise that had gripped the United States. Well, we solved that by electing Ronald Reagan, and it was morning in America. Well, in China, there is kind of a permanent malaise now that has gripped the population. And, you know, I believe they're going to resort sooner or later to coercion to enforce a higher birth rate. They did it in the opposite direction by forcing down the birth rate in 1980, beginning in 1980 when I was in China and continuing on for decades. They would have no moral compunctions about doing it in the opposite direction, forcing the birth rate up. Now, they've already ordered the members of the Chinese Communist Party and soldiers in the People's Liberation Army to marry and have at least three children. So the populations, party and the military directly under the party control, are already being ordered to have more children. I think that will extend to the population at large. And before the end of this decade, I think that we will see the beginnings of forced pregnancy in China, perhaps forced insemination in China, perhaps monthly pelvic examinations to make sure that the women who've been inseminated are pregnant and continue their pregnancy and don't abort their children. If all that seems outrageous, it is, of course, morally, but it's nothing other than what they did for 35, 36 years under the one-child policy, just in the opposite direction, you see.
Right. They can be ruthless in either direction.
Absolutely. And they are.
Do you see any of those issues evident in America at all, Reggie?
No, because the sex selective abortion in America is balancing itself out. You know what I'm saying? Is we don't have a gender imbalance because of the sex selective abortion. Aborting probably equal numbers of girls and boys, so you wouldn't have a situation of like bachelor villages or anything like that.
Reggie, do you know possibly how sex selective abortion has impacted the global population?
There is an estimate that there are approximately 200 million missing women and girls worldwide. And that number, 200 million, is more than all the casualties of all the wars of the 20th century. So I would submit that sex selective abortion is the true war on women.
Yeah, very much so. Thank you so much for joining us and talk about an important issue.
Thank you so very much, Brad. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, this has been an enlightening program, Victor. Not many people think about sex-selective abortions. I think a lot of America doesn't even realize that they are actually done.
And you know, Brad, I would bet that many of the people who might have known that this was happening didn't know before today's program the scale and the scope, just how significant this really is. To hear the numbers brought forward by our guests, it's shocking the impact that this has had, not just, you know, around the world, but even in our own country.
Yeah, and the long-term effects, Victor, both guests talked about that. These are profound, and these are negative impacts on society wherever sex selection abortion has taken hold. You know, we reap what we sow, and I'm really fearful for those countries that they are going to have a difficult time in for generations to come.
Oh, of course. And it's exactly like Steve said, children are the most important resource that a country could have. And when you're aborting so many children simply because you wanted them to be a different gender, of course, there's going to be terrible consequences for countries that are allowing this. And I want to encourage you, our listener, to go to our website, lifeissues.org. There you'll find more information and resources where you can learn more about the awful practice of sex selective abortions. You'll find information from our wonderful guests, and you can share that with your friends and your family as we work together to put an end to this atrocity. Again, that's available at lifeissues.org. Be sure to tune in next week for another Straight Talk on Life Issues.